A production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio, and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Welcome to Ave Maria in the Afternoon, examining the world through the lens of faith from the heart of the Church to help us navigate the culture. Here's Dr. Marcus Peter.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much for joining us on this hour of Ave Maria in the Afternoon. I'm Marcus Peter. We're joined by my friend Doug Keck, who joins us every Monday to talk about current events in light of church teaching and EWTN programming as we collectively do that together. And today, we will be talking about Doug Keck's insights and thoughts on the election of Pope Leo XIV, our Holy Father. And we're going to acknowledge elephants in the room pertaining to where Catholics are at, both sentimentally as well as in terms of the global expression of the faith, and where the Holy Father has already established us, where he might be taking us in terms of his Augustinian training, his wonderful canonical background, which, by the way, warrants a tremendous amount of precision. It warrants a tremendous amount of articulate thought and articulation of that thought systematically. And we've already seen that. The text of his first homily, for example, is proof positive that this is a man who thinks carefully and prays through what he puts down on paper in the systematic presentation of his ideas and thoughts. We go on from there to speak with January Donovan. January will be speaking on May the 23rd at the Courage Under Fire Gala about how women can reclaim their femininity. EWTN is going to be there as a presence, and you can be too. We want to talk about the event, how you and I can benefit from it, and January's contribution to helping women reclaim the gospel narrative of womanhood, and from there, living that out in this modern age, especially in light of the immense amount of narratives that are attempting to rewrite the definition of womanhood and femininity in the social culture. And then finally, we speak with Adam Wright, my friend who went through brain surgery lately. We spoke with him before, about a day or so before he had brain surgery, and his recovery has been remarkable. We want to talk about how Christ has been walking Adam and his bride Beth and their children through this season. And also, we want to pick Adam's brain about his thoughts on the Holy Father. And we talk about all of this after the headlines.
Thanks, Marcus. Good afternoon, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Monday, May 12th. It's the Feast of Epiphanius of Salamis. Today's news brought to you by Visiting Angels, providing loving care and assistance for seniors in need at visitingangels.com. In his first Sunday address, Pope Leo XIV called for world peace, noting the conflicts in Ukraine, Gaza, and between India and Pakistan. Speaking from the loggia of St. Peter's Basilica, the Pope also wished women worldwide, including those in heaven, a happy Mother's Day. Earlier, Pope Leo celebrated a private mass near the tomb of St. Peter, the head of the Augustinian order, and his brother, John Prevost, attending yesterday's mass at the Vatican. The hostage raised in New Jersey, just freed by Hamas, is speaking to his parents for the first time since October 7, 2023. The mother, Israeli-American Edan Alexander, speaking with her son by phone.
They just released a photo of you, and you look unbelievable. Wow. You look beautiful. I love you so much.
The 21-year-old is from the small suburb of Tenafly, New Jersey. His hometown is watching an outdoor TV to see his return to Israel and then eventually to the U.S. U.S. stocks are surging today after the U.S. and China agreeing to temporarily slash tariffs. Speaking from the White House, President Trump said it followed productive talks in Geneva over the weekend.
Both sides now agreed to reduce the tariffs imposed after April 2nd to 10% for 90 days as negotiators continue in the largest structural issues.
The Dow Jones Industrial Average soared over 1,000 points at times, while the S&P 500 grew 3.25%, while the NASDAQ surged over 4%. From your AveMariaRadio.net news desk, I'm Steve Clark.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. We are joined by Doug Keck, who is no stranger to this program, and we are talking about the election of our new Holy Father. Doug, thank you for joining us. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm elated. I am encouraged, and I'm hopeful. I'm reservedly hopeful. I don't want to hedge my bets anywhere other than in the promise of Christ over His church.
Right. That's what we have to do, and we rely on the Holy Spirit prompting the cardinals to select the right person for the time period we're in, coming out of Francis's pontificate and going forward into a new technological age, which our new Holy Father seems to be quite aware of.
You know, Doug, if I may ask you, and I think we can all acknowledge this, because these are elephants in the room that we would be remiss if we didn't address, and that's that we are moving forward from the Francis papacy, and without casting any aspersion upon him or malice upon his character, we can admit that he was a polarizing figure in the church, and maybe even globally. Now, in light of that, Pope Leo XIV enters this fall as our new Holy Father.
Absolutely, and I think there were aspects of the making a mess that the Holy Father, our recent Holy Father, had to bring up issues and things like that. I think at times a lot of people would have thought that maybe there could have been some more clarity into some of these things and a little less kind of off the cuff, shooting from the hip, and a little more teaching kind of thing that you expect from the Pope. You know, I think sometimes you end up in a situation with people, and he even said early on, he said, I'm Jorge Bergoglio, I'll always be the same. Mm-hmm. That, you know, what you can do as a parish priest, or what you can even do as a bishop in a particular diocese versus the role that the Pope takes on is different. And I don't think you can necessarily say things at times that are imprecise when there's so many people sitting there trying to figure out what exactly is being said. Is something new being offered? What exactly is happening? And I think the great thing about the new selection is this focus, obviously, in its Augustinian, and certainly the concept of unity in the community. I think that's a major aspect of his focus, and the idea, as Augustine always talked about, those that you need unity in the essentials. You can have diversity in the non-essentials. Now, sometimes the argument becomes which are essential and which are non-essentials. Some people debate that, but at least that concept, and I think that's where people are looking for, which is to say there are certain, unchangeable aspects of the doctrine of the church that no one should be playing fast and loose with, nor giving people the impression that somehow you can play around the edges. And at the same time, yes, there are some other things, communion in the hand versus communion on the tongue, or whether they're altar servers, these kinds of things that are flexible, where you can disagree. You don't have to believe in every Marian approved apparition to be a good Catholic. You don't believe in any of them. So there are those kind of things that sometimes we act like, well, this is, you have to believe this or you're not really a good Catholic. That's not true. But it's important that on the things that are core to the faith, that those things are explicitly reinforced on a regular basis and that there's no doubt about them.
And that's why when we, again, being very honest with acknowledging these realities, one of the impressions that the world jumped on and therefore expanded was that doctrine was changing, or as they say, finally changing, and the church was modernizing, but that was completely untrue.
Right, and that's the idea. I think there's the appropriate understanding of Vatican II, of course, and the pastoral aspects of it, and different times was hijacked by different people with different agendas. And I think one of the things, being a canon lawyer, somebody who's very more precise in how they teach and how they look at what the church has always taught or what the church has always permitted, I think that will be helpful. At times it might be helpful, even for things where it's kind of like, oh, I didn't really think you could really do that, or I may not agree with that, but at least you get the idea that that is an understanding of the church, and it's not damaging the deposit of faith because that's being discussed, etc. And obviously some other things. I mean, obviously the Marian connection we see there, mm-hmm. obviously St. Augustine. Yeah. Certainly was not, you know, somebody who was running around fast and loose with the gospel, though, mm-hmm. you know, he did have an openness to the Donatists, you know, dealing with the Donatists and stuff like that, and yeah. the idea of people to bring them back into the church. I mean, that is an aspect of Augustine of saying, you know, yes, these people did terrible things, but we can't, you know, we should welcome them back. We can't hold that against them. And I think that's the great message of the church in general. I think certainly all the popes have said it. Certainly Pope Francis, I think, in a lot of ways tried to emphasize that idea that no one is lost to the faith. No one is lost to the truth.
Right.
I think where you'd lost some clarity was the fact that it doesn't mean that you keep doing what you're doing and that's okay. It means that you have the opportunity to return like the prodigal son.
Yep. And that's crucial for us to reemphasize. And like you mentioned, between his wondrous skills of being a canonist, his wondrous appeal again to Augustine, but also the fathers of the church, his first homily appealed to Ignatius of Antioch. So we are seeing a kind of appeal to those linguistic precisions that are so necessary for communicating what Jesus has handed down to us.
Absolutely. And I think it's important when in talking about Leo XIII and the idea of the social gospel is that sometimes the social gospel teachings of the church are not what you read about in the newspapers or you hear about on television. They're a lot more specific yep. in what they are and what they're not.
Yep.
And we have these kind of social gospel things which basically can lead to virtually everybody doing whatever they want to do mm-hmm. outside of if, you know, the only bad people are people who don't want to pay taxes to feed the poor or
right.
people who are being intolerant of whatever is going on. I mean, as Bishop Sheen said, you know, I mean, there's nothing better than being intolerant of things that shouldn't be tolerated.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the distinction. If there is something that shouldn't be tolerated, we shouldn't tolerate it. If it is something that the church believes there is differing opinions or different perspectives, you know, there is that aspect inside the church. It's certainly different forms of ways that we, you know, worship. Even the idea of, you know, shutting down the traditional Latin Mass and yeah. those kind of things and saying, well, gee, if that's attracting people, I mean, it's the same thing on the other side of saying, mm-hmm. well, these guitar masses, they're having this or they're doing that over there, kind of having this Mass, and somebody would say, well, we shouldn't do that. And they say, well, look, it's attracting young people.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it goes on the other side. If you say, you know, what about the TLM? It's a throwback. It's pre-Vatican II. You say, yeah, but it's, first of all, that's not the case. And second of all, look, it's attracting people.
Right.
And our goal is to attract people to the teachings of the church and the faith. And once we get them interested, then obviously we can explicate the faith in a better way and they can have a better life and hopefully go to heaven.
If I may expand, therefore, the conversation into the temperaments of Pope Francis and juxtaposing him with Pope Leo XIV, Pope Francis had a real penchant for interviews, for being very vocal, speaking off the cuff. Pope Leo XIV, thus far, and given his trajectory of statements, seems to be more reserved, careful, articulate, and thoughtful about how he expresses his ideas.
Well, I think he's a canon lawyer. So I think a canon lawyer is somebody like most lawyers, I mean, except the ones you see on television, but the ones normally are very, you know, slow to
yeah.
lay out opinions. They're reserved. They calculate that each word has a special meaning, and so they're much more, I think, succinct and careful in how they say things because they know that they will have an impact on the case if they were doing a case. And in this case, I think as you talk to journalists, etc., the idea of the precision in trying to make people, hopefully, especially secular people, understand what we're actually saying as opposed to how they interpret it.
Right. And therefore, what is needed right now more than anything is a continued proclamation of the deposit of faith to a world that's swimming in ambiguity, and his first homily seemed to highlight that.
Absolutely, and that's what I think the cardinals are looking for. That's what the church needs right now. We understand the reaching out and doing that, but we also need that solid construction to hold the church together and for people to make sure that nothing's changing. 2,000 years, it's the same teaching.
Yep. My friend and my guest, President and COO of EWTN, Doug Keck, we've been talking about the wondrous gift we've received in Pope Leo XIV. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
Beckway Door is a top provider of garage doors as well as home entry, patio, and storm doors. Locally owned since 1978, we give free, no-pressure quotes at prices 20% lower than most competitors, and often provide same-day service for garage door repairs. Mention Ave Maria Radio for 10% off the replacement or service of your garage door or the installation of new exterior doors. Visit BeckwayDoor.com. That's BeckwayDoor.com.
When the need for senior care arises, home is where the heart is. Visiting Angels provides home care for mom or dad up to 24 hours per day, including personal care, meals, and light housework. You may select your professional caregiver with Visiting Angels. More information at visitingangels.com or at 877-374-LIVE. That's 877-374-LIVE. Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care.
Ave Maria in the Afternoon is underwritten by the following nonprofit organization: Real Estate for Life. Buying or selling your home or business property? Real Estate for Life can connect you with one of 1,400 pro-life real estate agents around the world. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 70% to Ave Maria Radio and Human Life International. More information at realestateforlife.org or 877-LIFE-US1. That's realestateforlife.org.
You like pizza? Me too. And for that, we can thank our friend Tom Monahan. First, he starts with $900 and opens one pizza shop. Then it's worldwide, thousands of shops. But all this was just a warm-up for his greatest achievement yet. He built a university.
God inspired Tom to build up generations of men and women who have a hunger to reach the world for Christ. This place is Ave Maria University.
Visit avemaria.edu to see what's next.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. January Donovan will speak on May the 23rd at the Courage Under Fire Gala about how women can reclaim their femininity. EWTN is going to be there, and you can be too. She joins us to talk about this wondrous event. January, thank you for joining us. How are you?
Hello, Dr. Peter. How are you? Thank you so much for having me.
I'm well. I'm elated. I'm still celebrating the gift of another Holy Father, and I'm excited to see what God has in store for the Church through his leadership. So that's where I'm at, and I'm pretty sure you're in the same boat.
I'm in the same boat when you said we're here to build bridges to the world, and I just thought, what a universal church we have to be able to really disciple, you know, I think a world that's truly hungry for Jesus. Mm-hmm. I think finally we are ready for a movement, especially I think in the world of women. So I'm just excited as you.
So let's talk about that. I want you to give us an idea of what you are going to talk about in terms of the role of woman, reclaiming your womanhood. This womanhood, as you well know, you're at the forefront of this, is under attack from relativistic anthropology. The world simply mm-hmm. can't even define the term, and yet here you are, and that's the core of your apostolate.
Yes, I'm so excited because I think that we are at the cusp of something pretty amazing when it comes to women. So if you think about the history of women, 100 years ago, roughly, women did not have freedom. The freedom, essentially, if you think about it, to possibly fulfill what our Lord is actually calling them. There was limitations in the call for women. And now the radical extreme, 150 years ago, women have unlimited freedom. What's so exciting is that we now have data that both do not work. Mm-hmm. One out of women suffer from anxiety, and what we have right now are women who does not understand her value. We have such a void understanding of truth, beauty, and goodness, and I think mm-hmm. what we have right now is a crisis that we don't know how to be a woman, which is actually the name of my talk, is how to be a woman in a world where we can no longer define what a woman is. And so I'm excited to introduce and cast a vision of this new woman for such a time as this. Who is she? What is her purpose? What is she created for? And how can we create a human formation movement that forms every single woman to prepare her to receive Jesus and also to become a vessel for Christ?
Right.
So I'm going to essentially do three things. Number one, we're going to talk about the crisis of womanhood. Let's get to the root of the crisis. Let's identify the crisis of why women today are not flourishing, when in reality our Lord has designed us from the garden to flourish.
Mm-hmm.
Why women are overwhelmed. What is the root cause of women's overwhelm today? And why are women anxious? And then we're going to talk about what do women need today to flourish? And how do we create a movement of women that is in harmony with her nature, that also is complementary with men, that gives her the tools to also become a vessel to form families, our communities, and really our faith.
And you raise a few terms here that we take for granted, because especially for those of us who have read through the church's teachings on the co-equality and dignity of man and woman, but particularly this biblical language of complementarity in a world that cites competitiveness between the sexes as the core basis of viewing male-female relationships. You think of horrible works like Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus. You just drop the term complementarity. And so in the interest of our listeners, just help them understand God's plan for maleness and femaleness in relationships.
Yes. I think that what we've done is that for the sake of equality, we have diluted the very gift of what it means to be both a man and a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And the byproduct and the consequence is that we've also negated the fact that we were created to complement each other. Biologically, we can see that common sense. But more than that, we see that in the role of family. And so what I think the world is ready for, Doctor, is that what we have seen is that the transgender movement exposed the evil, exposed also this sort of kind of the emperor with no clothes, that we really can't continue in a world where we talk to men and women the same, that we go into this world where for the sake of equality, we teach our boys and our girls in the same way. We have negated the very gift of sexuality. And I think what we need to do is to, I think, go back to understanding the very gift of what a man does and the very gift of what a woman is.
Mm-hmm.
And there we can see, oh, we were not only biologically, you know, God created to complement each other. From a very social level, our hormones, our gifts are actually made to complement each other in the workplace, in the home. But what I think is exciting is that the world is finally ready for it. You know, when we now have athletes posing, male athletes posing as women, what we're seeing is how crazy this world where you are your own God.
Right.
You know, where you can become the moral authority. And what it's exposing is it's not a sustainable model for the world.
Right.
And what it's actually saying, you know, what we have right now, which is why I think there's a surge of sort of a conservative movement where we're saying, okay, fine, we see it. We can't be the God. We can't be the enlightened person, right? The enlightenment where we are the God. We actually need authority outside of ourselves. So you have people outside of faith that are looking into God and say, okay, we can't go on like this. There has to be a moral authority. And so what the moral authority is that now we can look at, oh, how did God create man and woman? I think what I think is beautiful about this time is that we in our church have a beautiful theological explanation about the gift of both men and women.
Mm-hmm.
What I think is missing is how to live it out incarnationally.
Mm.
The formation of the human person, I believe John Paul talks about, is a crisis. How do you make decision? How do you honor your value? How do you manage your mind, your emotion? How do you compliment a man? How do you show up as a woman?
Right.
Not this idea of masculine energy or female energy that I think convolutes the language and makes us susceptible to confusion. I think language is a spiritual battle. And so we have to go back, I think, to the heart of who women is, which is nurturers of humanity. Mother Teresa had a great quote when I was in Steubenville, and there was this quote in my freshman year. It says, the power of a woman lies in her capacity to receive and nurture love. Not only is it in our biological DNA to receive and nurture love, it's also the way God designed us in our souls.
Right.
And I think we're finally ready to say, you know what? I think there's some truth to that. I think this world has gone mad. We can't even define what a woman is. We have a Supreme Court judge that can't define what a woman is.
Yep.
This is insanity. And so we have a golden opportunity to introduce a new model of woman that mimics Our Lady, that introduces the complementarity of both men and women. I think we're ready for depth, for truth, and for beauty, and what it means to truly be a family.
And you also bring up, therefore, these core distinctions that we've forgotten, that at one point, however, society seemed to have taken for granted because of foundational Judeo-Christian principles, core being you're not supposed to speak to men and women the same. In fact, women, as a man, and I'm trying to raise my son this way, women are owed a certain level of deference, a certain level of honor, and we call that chivalry. It's supposed to be ingrained in virtuous masculinity. It's just missing from the culture.
Yes, and I think that actually more men are becoming more conservative and actually researching their faith because they have been so violated, I think, by this sort of radical agenda. And I would also dare say that the good men who have fought right alongside us for our value have also been forgotten. And so what we are seeing right now is actually a resurgence of good men and women and say, you know what? I want to do my part to own and understand my nature as a woman.
Right.
I no longer want to sign up to this idea of equality that allows me to sort of ignore the fact that really I can't do it alone. I was never designed to. Right. You know, we are designed to be, to do it in communio, right, as a church, but also as man and woman. And so I think that we are ready for a new model of women because what we saw is the feminist movement, and that's sort of an arbitrary word just because, you know, it's a controversial word, but for the lack of a word, I think that what we are seeing is that we have been sold a model of women that has defied our nature, and we're ready to embrace our nature.
Well, thank you so much, January, and we'll have the information of this event in our program description today. My guest is January Donovan. She will speak on May the 23rd at the Courage Under Fire Gala about how women can reclaim their femininity. EWTN is going to be there. The link to register will be in the description of today's program. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
Resetting your password, unsubscribing from emails, printing anything. Why are simple things sometimes so complicated? Thankfully, with an auto owner's insurance independent agent, getting the right coverage for your business doesn't have to be one of them. So you can get back to more important things, like learning how that printer works. That's simple human sense.
Call Choice Insurance Agency at 734-641-4200.
Ann Arbor Smiles is a state-of-the-art dental practice led by the talents of Drs. Dan Kennedy, Chris Marzoni, and Stephen Gray. One of their many satisfied patients is Father Deacon Lawrence Hendricks.
I was one of the first patients to receive a Sarah crown from Dr. Kennedy. The Sarah technology allows for restorations to be done in one visit. They always use the most advanced techniques in dentistry. I've always enjoyed the friendly staff and the personal relationships that I have at Ann Arbor Smiles.
Go to AnnArborSmiles.com today.
The Catholic Church teaches that Jesus Christ is literally and wholly present, body and blood, soul and divinity, under the appearances of bread and wine. St. John the Apostle records the John chapter 6 Bread of Life discourse, in which Jesus states that his flesh is true food and his blood true drink. Who better to understand John's writings and subsequent teachings than a disciple and student of John, St. Ignatius of Antioch? In his letter to the Smyrnians in 110 AD, Ignatius writes, "I have no taste for corruptible food, nor for the pleasures of this life. I desire the bread of God, which is the flesh of Jesus Christ. And for drink, I desire his blood, which is love incorruptible." The Catholic Church absolutely follows St. John and St. Ignatius in taking Jesus at his word. Examining the truths of the Catholic faith, this is faithforensics.org.
My daughter learned early on that she needs her space, time alone. As she got older, this alone time became more and more important to her. She loves being with her friends and family and having fun, but she knows her limits. She knows when she needs to step away and be in silence. We know that God's voice is hard to hear when there's so much racket around us. Yes, it gets so loud sometimes in this world that I can't even hear myself speak, let alone God. So I step into silence, sitting before the Lord, trying to quiet my mind. There's so much noise in the world, and sometimes we need to communicate silence. No TV, no social media, no music, nothing but silence. The hardest part is not allowing your mind to wander. I'm not just quieting my mind, I try to clear it, so the only thing I hear is the voice of God, heard the loudest in the silence. This has been a Christ-Centered Communication Message. I'm Vanessa Denha-Garmo, a communications evangelist and host of Epiphany.
You like pizza? Me too. And for that, we can thank our friend, Tom Monahan. First, he starts with $900 and opens one pizza shop. Then it's worldwide, thousands of shops. But all this was just a warm-up for his greatest achievement yet. He built a university.
God inspired Tom to build up generations of men and women who have a hunger to reach the world for Christ. This place is Ave Maria University.
Visit avemaria.edu to see what's next.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. The next two segments I've been looking forward to for a few weeks now. My friend Adam Wright, he has been called by God to undergo a very specific kind of suffering. And I say that not saying that God imputed the suffering upon him, but God has allowed him and his bride to go through it. And Adam and his bride Beth have been undergoing this with the love that can only be found by someone standing at the foot of the cross. During Holy Week, we spoke with him before his brain surgery. And today, he joins us to talk about his life since then, and also his life now, in enjoying the fatherhood of a new Holy Father. Adam, it's great to speak with you. How are you?
Well, Marcus, I'm doing well, and I think you're being a little hard on yourself talking about all these text messages you send me as me standing at the foot of the cross. It's not fair. They're good text messages.
You know what? Props for that. Okay, that's very good. That's very good. So, Adam, I have to be honest with you, and I think all our listeners were probably thinking the same thing when we had you on the air a few days. I think it was a day or so before your surgery. So, once again, thank you for generously doing that. But everyone's been wondering, how have you been? What's the recovery been like? And how are you doing?
Well, it's a mixed bag of things. Overall, I'm doing very well. My neurosurgeon and my wife, who is a nurse, have both assured me that I'm actually progressing very well in my recovery. But I think every patient who's ever been through any surgery would say, no matter what the doctors tell you on how well you're doing, you're not doing as well as you'd like to be doing. You just want life to get back to normal, and you want it to get back to normal quickly. Despite how well I'm feeling, my driving privileges have been suspended until August.
Wow.
And that's probably at this point one of the most frustrating parts of this, is not having the freedom to go where I want to go, when I want to go, unless I can go there on, as my mother calls it, the 10-toe taxi. If my 2 feet can't take me there, I'm at the mercy of someone else to take me there. But I will tell you, there has been so much spiritual fruit in the 3.5 weeks since the surgery, especially, you know, I know we're already on the third Sunday of Easter, but Good Friday lasted a little long for me this year, and it's just starting to be Easter for me. And this was, without a doubt, in 42 years of life, the most powerful Good Friday that I have ever experienced, and I can't thank God enough for inviting me to be part of that.
And again, you know, you say those words, and we know those words from the teachings of the church, but to encounter someone who's living that is a tremendously catechetical and sobering experience for the rest of us. And so, Adam, I also want to invite you to share. Now, I'm going to take a step forward and say that your recovery has been miraculous, but I have no right to call that a formal miracle. But I want to ask you to just share about how quickly you've been on the mend.
Well, you know, we didn't know what to expect going in. In fact, there was a lot of fear going in. It's not normal to open up one's head and have a surgeon work on one's brain. That is pretty, I mean, they do it enough that they're good at it, but that's not the normal course of action for most people. And I remember waking up, you know, I remember going into the operating room. I remember them saying, can you scoot from this bed onto this table? And I did that just fine. I don't remember them counting backwards from 10. I just remember waking up in a completely different place and being in incredible pain with multiple IVs, an arterial line, other tubes, and just being incredibly uncomfortable, even if I didn't move. And then if I tried to move, it was even worse. And coming to peace with that. And all night long, I was in the intensive care unit. I was just waiting for them to say, okay, we're going to disconnect you from some of this so you can get up and moving. Because I knew that was going to be the key from previous surgeries and from what other people have told me. Like, if you can get up and move, you're in a good spot. And I just wanted to get up and move. Little did I know that my doctor was going to come in at 7:30 in the morning, the following morning, and say, hey, you're looking really good and your vitals are looking great. I'm very pleased with how the surgery went. If occupational therapy and physical therapy sign off on it, you can go home today. And even my nurse kind of looked in surprise, like, wait, I thought we were moving him to another floor in the hospital. Go home. And sure enough, OT and PT came in and they walked me down the hall. They had me do some basic things that you have to be able to do to go home. Can you put your socks and shoes on? Can you dress yourself? Can you walk up and down a flight of stairs? And I passed with flying colors, and they sent me home. And it was a very surreal feeling, but it was still one of those things that with every movement, especially of the head, there was just pain. I identified a lot with our Lord and his crown of thorns. How do you move your head in a crown of thorns and not have it hurt? And there was great joy in that. And I think most people who have had surgery would recall this part of the experience. The drugs they give you in the hospital for pain are great, and they actually last a little bit longer than while you're there. And so you come home and you have a feeling of, this isn't as bad as I thought it would be. And I said to Beth, I feel okay enough. Let's go to Good Friday service at our parish on Friday evening. And about halfway through, I realized, oh, these drugs are wearing off, and now the real challenge is coming. And by the end of that service, I was ready to just go home and be in bed. But it was a very powerful grace that our Lord allowed it to be that time frame. Because as we're approaching the veneration of the cross, as this beautiful liturgy unfolds, I couldn't help but focus on his cross and everything that he endured in his passion. And I think last time I was on the show with you, we spoke about this, the beautiful reflection from St. John Henry Newman, that he doesn't need us to participate in the paschal work for it to be accomplished. He can do it all on his own, and yet he invites us to be like Simon of Cyrene and to have some small part to play in this that actually makes a difference. And I didn't know how I was going to stand up. I didn't know how I was going to get out of that pew and get to that cross to venerate, but I knew that God knew how it was going to happen. And what a great joy it was to just recognize something I've taken for granted most of my life, that his invitation to participate in the cross is not a weight to be under and lament and say, Lord, why are you burdening me with this? I thought you were taking care of this. Why are you asking me to be part of this? I'm here for the joy of Easter, for Good Friday. Everyone said, surely, Adam, you don't have to get up. You don't have to get up. Everyone will understand if you stay in the pew. But how could I not get up? You know, that was the question that was just sitting on me. How could you not get up and venerate so holy of an image on this Good Friday?
Meanwhile, there are some of us who have a hard time kneeling for a little long, and so that in and of itself is a sobering exhortation, but you also raise a very important meditative point, Adam, and I'd like to invite you to speak to the fact that watching your loved one suffer is a very particular suffering, and it makes you feel helpless. Just share about how you've been witnessing Beth and your children watch you go through this.
It's been difficult to watch them go through this. I share with friends and with some of our radio listeners on Covenant Network and in the various places I go to speak that overall, do I have a difficult part to play in this? Yes. Do I have the hardest part to play? No. Beth by far has the most burdensome cross of any of us, because she has to take care of the children. She has to take care of me, and she has to take care of herself. And she was exhausted. She was exhausted when we got home from the hospital. The children were with her parents for several days just to give me a chance to ease into being back at home. And they just wanted to be at home. And a couple of them in particular wanted that reassurance that dad was with them and that, that dad was okay. Mm. This is a very, you know, I don't know what went through their heads, but I know they were scared. You know, again, how many of their classmates can say, my dad went to the hospital and they opened a hole in his head and put things into his brain and then put things out of his brain? That's a very scary proposition for a child.
Yeah.
But it's led to some great conversations about what it means to have answered prayers and what it means to have trust. And I think of one of our children in particular. We were talking about this, and she was wrestling with this very difficult question of, God did not answer my prayers. And I said, what do you mean by that? She goes, well, I prayed that nothing more would happen to you. And we got to talk about that when we come back. Because it's a very powerful moment.
My guest is Adam Wright. He's the morning show host of Roadmap to Heaven for Covenant Catholic Radio, Covenant Catholic Radio Network. And he's sharing about the sufferings that he has been going through in light of the love of Christ and Christ's crucifixion. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
Underwritten in part by the following nonprofit.
Are you paying high prices with a traditional health insurance company that pays for things that violate your conscience? There's an alternative available. Solidarity HealthShare is a community of faithful individuals and families that never share into immoral medical services, all while saving you money with prices starting as low as $85 per month for singles and $512 for families. Never fund another abortion with your healthcare dollars. Call 844-313-4999 to learn more.
This program brought to you in part by Ave Maria Florida, a big kind of small town, where golf carts take you everywhere and there's always something fun around the corner. Discover championship golf, resort-style amenities, and a town center full of shopping and dining. With Ave Maria University and Ave Maria Catholic Church at its heart, it's a community full of connection and charm. More than 25 model homes are available for viewing. More information can be found at avemaria.com. That's avemaria.com.
When Pope Leo XIV was first revealed to the world, Ave Maria Radio carried it live.
We see movement. Movement on the balcony. The doors are opening.
Abemus Papam.
Pope Leo XIV, the former Cardinal Robert Prevo of Chicago in the United States.
You can feel the emotion in the crowd.
Long live the Pope.
Do you wish you could have discussions about difficult topics with your adult children? If so, don't worry. You're not alone. Hi, I'm Dr. Greg Popcheck.
And I'm Lisa Popcheck, and our book, Having Meaningful, Sometimes Difficult Conversations with Your Adult Sons and Daughters, can help you draw closer to your adult children and help guide them on the path to more faithful and meaningful lives.
You can get our latest book and all of our other books on the store page at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net.
Why would God permit the devil to tempt his son in the desert? The symbolism behind those temptations, as provided by the Catholic Catechism, gives great insight into God's rationale. Jesus, driven by the Spirit, goes into the desert to live in solitude for 40 days. At the close of that period of prayer and fasting, the devil arrives to attempt to compromise Jesus' filial devotion to God his Father. Satan tempts Jesus three times, and Jesus rebuffs him three times. This is a recapitulation of Satan's seduction of Adam. Only this time he loses to the new Adam. It is also a recapitulation of Israel in the desert when the Hebrews provoked God during their 40-year sojourn. In contrast, Jesus is totally obedient to his Father's will. Jesus' victory over temptation is a prelude to his victory over sin on the cross. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Spring into mowing season with a new Cub Cadet lawn tractor from Weingarts. We've been helping families like yours choose the right power equipment since 1945. Cub Cadet XT Enduro Series tractors are engineered to offer the best combination of quality, value, and performance. Cub Cadet lawn and garden tractors offer comfort and year-round versatility. Stop by our stores to help find your next Cub Cadet or visit us online at Weingarts.com. From our family to yours, thank you for letting us serve you.
Weingarts, everything.
St. Therese once told her sister Celine that when we trust ourselves and not God, our soul becomes barren and incapable of virtue. Her remedy? External works of charity. We all try to do it on our own sometimes, without asking for God's help. At St. Paul Evangelization, we suggest sharing the gospel with someone who needs it. Check out streetevangelization.com to find a team near you where you can share the love of Jesus. If there isn't one in your area yet, perhaps God is calling you to start a team in your city. To learn more, visit streetevangelization.com.
Good afternoon. Welcome back. I'm Marcus Pete. I'm talking with my friend Adam Wright. He's a fellow laborer in the vineyard of radio and media evangelization. And alongside his wondrous theological acumen, he's been gifted with a very rare wit that most of us have to work at. And Adam, you were just starting to tell us about this very unique and heartwarming encounter you had with your child about grappling with the reality of unanswered prayers and the love of the Father.
Well, you know, Marcus, it's a great opportunity to reflect on how much do we trust God. And this was the conversation that we had with one of our daughters who was saying, you know, I asked God not to let anything more happen to you. And here you are. They found this mass in your brain and you're going in to have brain surgery. And God didn't answer my prayer. So why does God not love us? And why does God not love you? And it was a real, I have to say, it's a great joy to be on the other side of this, because when I was first diagnosed with this mass back in February, immediately we went to, has my cancer metastasized to my brain? Because that would be a very poor prognosis. It would be a very poor indicator of future health. And I'm happy to report that both the neurosurgeon, based on what he felt and what he saw as he pulled it out, and the actual pathology reports have confirmed that it was a cavernous malformation of blood vessels. It was not cancer in my brain. And having that conversation with our daughter, well, you know, maybe this is God taking care of it, that he knew that there was going to be some cross to carry, but he was going to make sure that it wasn't going to be cancer. Now, we don't know. We don't know if he intervened. We don't know if what exactly happened, what caused this. We'll probably never know what caused this. We do know, at least according to the quick research I've done on ChatGPT a few weeks ago, that I was 10 times more likely to get killed by a shark than I was to have stage 4 small intestine neuroendocrine cancer with liver metastases and an independent cavernous malformation in the brain. So, and I haven't seen any sharks lately. So I told her, I said, you know, I think what we have to remember here is, yes, does God allow us to suffer things? Absolutely. And we started talking about Job and everything in the book of Job. But does that mean that he's not taking care of us? Mm. Absolutely. Absolutely not. He is still taking care of us. Because if for no other reason, I had brain surgery. And here I am with no obvious impairments at this point, with no obvious side effects. In fact, we know that I feel much better after the surgery than I did going into the surgery. And if we wouldn't have caught this when we did, it could have turned into something much worse. It was obviously bleeding on the scans. It could have at some point become a hemorrhagic stroke or an ischemic stroke, and that could have been fatal or debilitating. And yet God allowed me to undergo this vertigo, which sent me to the emergency room, which led to a scan, which led to a diagnosis, which led to a surgery. So maybe, you know, God was answering a prayer to keep me safe and keep me healthy by saying, well, I'm going to give you a little clue that something's wrong here. And that's how he answered that prayer. And I think of, you know, a lot's happened since I've had my surgery, Marcus. Not only has, you know, Hollywood come and gone, but we lost the Holy Father Pope Francis. Yeah. And we gained the Holy Father Pope Leo XIV. And I think of his first words when he first stepped out onto the loggia. Peace be with you all, dear brothers and sisters. These are the first words spoken by the risen Christ, the good shepherd who laid down his life for God's flock. I would like this greeting of peace to resound in your hearts, in your families, among all people, wherever they may be, in every nation and throughout the world. Peace be with you. And I can't help but go back to that Good Friday evening and venerating the cross at our parish church, and just where my prayer has been for these last few weeks, that reassurance. And I remember thinking this the day before my surgery. I was actually at the kids' school for all school mass, and I couldn't stop staring at the crucifix. I just couldn't stop staring at the crucifix. And what our Lord tells us through everything that we recounted during Holy Week no matter what happens to you, suffering and or death. I've been there. I know the way through to the other side, and I'm not going to abandon you in this process. No matter what happens in your surgery, no matter what happens in your recovery, no matter what happens next, I have been through the worst of suffering for you. I have been through death for you, and I'm not going to leave your side as long as you invite me to stay there.
And that actually presents a tremendous appeal to not only what you've been going through, Adam, and not only what the Gospels call us to, but also what the new Holy Father proclaimed in his first homily about going back to that fundamental proclamation about the incarnate one who was also the crucified one, who is also the risen one. He knows the way out of the grave. And I think that's an excellent segue for you to talk about being a son of this church. And so you undergo this surgery, you're undergoing this immense suffering, and then you mourn the loss of a holy father with the world speculating as uncharitably as possible, and now you're gifted with the gift of a new holy father and your heart's consoled. Just share with us what that's been like for you.
Well, you know, it's been a great joy. I have to say, this is, without a doubt, this is the third time now I've paid attention to a conclave, because mm-hmm. St. John Paul II was elected before I was born. This is the first time, though, that I've been awake at 4:30 in the morning local time to watch black smoke emanating forth from the chimney or to watch processions, and not because I was so excited and such a church nerd, which I am. I absolutely am. And I would have set an alarm, but I didn't have to. My body was like, Adam, you're going to be up, whether you want to be or not. And I'm like, well, here I am awake. I might as well watch. So I turned on EWTN, and I'm watching black smoke, and I'm watching processions, and I'm thinking of all of this. And there's two things that strike me. One, the day before he died, what did Pope Francis do? He went out among the people of God. In the midst of his suffering, he made himself available. Mm-hmm. And I've had some friends remind me that that's been a tremendous part of my witness to them, is that I'm not just shuddering behind a closed door out of fear, keeping myself hidden from the world in the midst of all of this. I'm just sharing it, not to say, oh, everyone, look at me, but always turning to that question, where is Jesus in the midst of all of this?
Yeah.
And I think of that example of Pope Francis. You could tell he didn't feel well. You could tell he was suffering. And yet he went out to be the vicar of Christ, the face of Christ, to those gathered on Easter Sunday. And then I also think about everything. I've been paying attention to everything Pope Leo's been saying, because we're all asking that same question. What's this pontificate going to be? Mm-hmm. And so far, it's been that return to the primacy of Christ. But what does that look like? And what does that mean for you and I? And what does that mean for everyone listening who may not be a theologian, who may not be a church nerd like you and I are watching this and trying to interpret the symbolism of what's going on and why did he choose this vestment or why did he use these words or why did he speak in this language? And I think about one of my favorite passages in the gospel, the healing of the man born blind, and how the Pharisees are questioning, well, why did he do this? And how did he do this? And what's his reason for doing this? And the man born blind finally says, look, I don't know why. You're asking the wrong. If you want to know that, go ask him. What I can tell you is I was blind, and now I can see.
Yep.
Right? I met Jesus, and now I am profoundly different in such an amazing, great way.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, one of the great opportunities for each and every one of us is to be asking that question every day. Have I welcomed Jesus into my life today?
Mm.
Have I encountered the Father through him? Have I looked for where the Holy Spirit's working in my life today? You don't have to have an advanced degree in theology or scripture or catechetics or canon law to be able to answer these questions. How am I different? How am I better for what Jesus has done in my life today? Jesus got me through brain surgery. Jesus walked with me through recovery in the ICU. Jesus made it so that I could go home early. Jesus made it so that my recovery is progressing faster. And most importantly, Jesus has made it so that I can see the gift in all of these things, whether they're his divine will or his permissive will, that this is how my situation is unfolding. And now, not to say, we went to oncology last week, we had a kind of a mixed bag report, scans look good, but we need to start talking about things now and making some decisions now that are weighing heavy that could affect the next several years, mm-hmm. Possibly the next decade. Okay, but you know what? Jesus is with us, and let's not lose sight of that. I was blessed to go out to a parish about a week and a half before the surgery. And if I had to boil everything down to one message, and I think I've shared this with you, it's just this: run to love. It's a twofold thing, that that Jesus is the source of love. And he wants to heal us, and he wants to restore us, and he wants to make us whole. Essentially, he wants to make us saints. That's the ultimate calling, to have every effect of sin, whether it's through health or spiritual health, mental health, the stains of sin removed when we're with him, God willing, in heaven. So let's run to him and let him heal us through the church, through the sacraments, through the ordinary means of salvation. But then he also gives us a command: don't keep it to yourself. Go and love your neighbor as you love yourself. It's the second greatest commandment. So let's run to love one another. When we see people around us that are struggling with health, or they're struggling with mental health, or they're struggling with spiritual weight, or maybe they've been, I love how much people have been saying, if you're paying attention to this conclave and you have questions about the faith, I'd love to sit down and talk with you. Let's run to share the peace of Christ, the joy of Christ, with everyone around us. And it's all so possible by saying, here's who I was, here's how I'm different after I invited him to work in my life.
At the risk of, I want to make clear here, this is not an endorsement of any particular TV show, but I do want to say this, that there are a few scenes in The Chosen that do resonate with a lot of what you've been talking about that come to mind. And one of which, like you mentioned earlier, this man who was healed, the cripple who was healed, I think they do a scene on that. There's this other scene about Mary Magdalene. She's healed, and she tells Nicodemus this, I think the words are, I was one way, now I'm different, and the only thing in between was him. And when I'm thinking about everything you've gone through, Adam, and I think about my own life, but I also, I'm speaking on behalf of our listeners here. Hearing you say this is an exhortation for us to understand that the world and how it reacts to the human nature and suffering is vastly different from how you and Beth have been living. And of course, we're out of time. Adam, thank you so much for making the time to speak with us.
It's my pleasure, Marcus, and let's not forget to encounter Jesus every day.
Amen. Let's run to love, friends. That was Adam Wright. He is the host of Roadmap to Heaven on Covenant Catholic Radio Network, and he's my friend, and he has just gotten out of surgery, brain surgery, and we continue to pray for him and his family. Thank you for joining us. I'm Marcus Peter.